Welcome to the Wise Women Collective Show.
Join hosts Lynn Schuessler-Williams, Holly Hartman, and Brooke Haynes with their inspiring guests for conversations that fuel personal growth, career success, and community impact.
Tune in to connect and amplify your power, because when women rise, the world follows. Hello, my name is Holly Hartman, and I am here with my co-host, Lynn Schuessler-Williams, and Brooke Haynes of the Wise Women Collective Radio Show. And we have an amazing guest I'm so excited to have on, Kim Russell. And Kim Russell has had quite the journey of her own reinvention and such a courageous life of overcoming trauma, how she's impacted it both in her personal and professional life. And so I can't wait to hear your story. So Kim, do you mind sharing briefly a little bit about who you are and what you do in the world?
No, mind at all. So my name is Kim Russell. I am born and bred a hairdresser, will always be a hairdresser. I started hairdressing school when I was 15. I opened my salon when I was 25. I am also an adoptee. I spent 4 years in the foster care system. And I do believe that you can rewrite your story, and your story does not define you. I am now recently just getting over breast cancer treatment. I am 1 month out. So that's my next hurdle, my next invention.
I love that. And you're currently, I know you're writing a book or have been published. Can you share a little bit more about that journey for yourself?
Yes. So during this breast cancer journey, that book was supposed to be released last November. And what happened was that book got a lot deeper when this happened. So there was a lot of revisions. It's with the editor once again, and she's going to get to it in January, and it will be out next year. And it's a memoir of my very, very colorful life.
I love that. I love that. So part of what we're talking about today is your courageous reinvention. Mm-hmm. So can you take us on maybe just one story, and that might be hard to pull from your very colorful collective, a story that maybe there's a thread in your life and maybe you can take from your book of a courageous reinvention that you experienced. Maybe it's from your book.
My first reinvention in life was probably, I started doing drugs and drinking when I was 11. So that is in the book. And at 18, I just had this flip of a switch. Somebody gave me actually cocaine for my birthday, my 19th birthday. And I said, I'm actually kind of high on life. And that was a flip. Never touched it again. Continued to drink way longer than I should have. But that was my first reinvention, like kind of, what do I do without drugs? I've had so many. I'm the person who flunked gym, but yet went on and did an Ironman. So I have both sides of the coin in my whole entire life.
I'm going to jump in here for a second. Do you find that there's like this challenge to be the opposite, or do you feel like it was naturally just happened without you even thinking about it?
I don't think I consciously thought about it. It just happened. Wonderful. I am determined to prove people wrong. So that's kind of, I definitely a watch me kind of mentality.
I love that. You know, Kim, it occurs to me as I listen to you say that, so many women fall victim to the social programs of what life is supposed to look like, or what I'm supposed to do. Or, Holly and I had a funny conversation one time about what I thought about what it meant to be a lady and how I didn't ever want to be one and spent my whole life trying not to be one in many, many ways. So, I love what you just said about this. You've always had this feeling of let me show you, let me prove you wrong. I love that so much. And I think it's so important for women today of all ages and stages to hear someone say, this is part of the journey, right? Is this feeling of I get to be me, just watch, right? That's so powerful. That's just like, whew, yes, thank you.
And honestly, it's been a fight, I would say, my whole entire life. Because as a foster child, you were deemed a bad kid, you know, just rotten to the core as far as people thought. And then to be a hairdresser, I was never going to be successful. I was never going to make any money. It wasn't a good enough career. You know, so I created my salon completely different than any other salon in the area. My employees had benefits and retirement funds and paid vacations, paid education. You know, I wanted them to have a career, not just a job. So I wanted to, I wanted them to be proud to say, I'm a hairdresser, without somebody going, oh, isn't that cute? That's nice.
Yeah. I love that. Would you mind sharing a little bit more about that? Because I think that is such a facet that happens for women in business, or just women in general, of you're just, or it's just, but you really embodied, but not only did it for yourself, but you created that container for other women or other practitioners in that field. And I know that you've also created networks within it, and you have taught it. Can you walk us through, like, where you had that aha moment of like, no, we're going to do it different. Like, did you have a moment where you decided, or did you just organically create it and go, oh, well, look what I just did?
You know, I firmly believe that there's people that come into your life when you need them the most. Nobody meets by accident. And when I was 20, I had somebody sit in my chair and she said, you really need to open a retirement fund. There's nothing in this industry for you. That's what you need to. She really, you know, the importance of it. And I watched my parents struggle financially my whole entire life. So I did. I put $50 a month away, and it was $50 I didn't have, but I understood the importance. So it wasn't like a flip. It was more like, okay, I know they need this. They need a retirement fund. That's what they need. It's very important. So I did that first, then came the vacations, then came the education was always there. So it was just kind of a gradual flow, and it was a good way to lure new hairdressers. It was enticing than going to that place that you're getting paid under the table, you know, $5 an hour, whatever it was back then.
Did you ever get pushback from the industry? Because that seems to be more of a trailblazer, against the grain type of experience, probably when you first started doing it, because you've been a hairdresser for what, 30 years, did you say? How long? And then what, did you get pushback when that happened?
It's been 40 years, yeah. I did get some pushback, and I still kind of get some pushback because of my views, but the industry is slow to come around, but they are coming around. It is getting better.
You know, one of the things we talked about when we were thinking about you and thinking about you coming on in this part of your story, we all had kind of things people said to us about the salon industry, or experiences as children. The story I told was when I was 9, I had my first perm, and when it hurt and it smelled bad and I didn't like it, my mother said to me, you know, honey, pride knows no pain. And somebody else had another one. Brooke had one very similar. What was it, Brooke?
Style before comfort.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Style before comfort. Yeah. And, you know, I see the beauty industry and the salon industry specifically as such a place for women to connect and be empowered. Like, it does not have to be. I mean, obviously you can look at me and see I don't spend a ton of time there anymore, but when I do, I spend the time with a very supportive, loving environment, right? And I know it can be that. And I know, so what do you have to say to women who, you know, really have a message about the beauty industry and what we do in it, and, you know, how we make it for us, not a detriment to us?
Well, I mean, it does matter how you feel when you walk into a place, right? Mm-hmm. I used to say that my salon, you'd walk in, it just felt like a hug. I mean, I did hug everybody. And we have the power to touch. Like, I've always touched people's shoulders. I've always And not only that, you know, we've been shared so many stories about domestic violence, and we can intervene there. And, you know, it's just such a powerful place. It's so much more than hair. So much more than hair.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, that's the truth. The person who's cut my hair for 25 years knows more about me than many of my friends, you know, outside of that salon, for sure. Yeah. We know each other's children. We know all their stories, you know, all of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a special place. And I do think the beauty industry has more special people in it than it does, you know, people who are going to tell you that it's pain or beauty before pain or whatever.
Right.
Well, I wanted to weave in, I know another part of your story is being adopted and being part of the foster care system. And then I know that's part of your book, I believe, too. Mm-hmm. Thinking back of what your impact as a child and then where you are in adulthood, I know that we have listeners that maybe have had adopted children or ones that they've had to put up for adoption. How do you engage in that context with people that have experienced that? I know that you do some work in that way. Can you share a little bit more about that work and how you use what you've experienced to help others now?
My experience is I do work with foster youth that are aging out of the system. You know, unfortunately, I think 21 is the oldest that they can be in the system, and then they are on their own. So I work with a mentoring nonprofit that's in the area and teach them basics, banking, how to get a loan, how to get an apartment, how to fill out a resume. It's very basic, things that you would get in school or you think you should get in school, but you don't. So stuff like that, just guiding the foster youth, being mentoring.
Things we typically learn from our parents.
Yes.
Not from the school system or not from a system. And so without that figure there, we take all that for granted, right? We like to walk around saying school should teach us all this, and they should. But no, but to appreciate that those of us who had the knowledge because we had someone to role model it, even if they didn't teach it, right?
Yes, and add that these kids are very guarded. Most of the kids that are aging out of the foster care system have been in, you know, 20, 30 different homes their whole entire life.
And on top of that, as their personality feel, because I too mentored that age, and then I fostered myself. I mean, I fostered children. What I learned was not only are they very guarded, but they're also kind of taught and almost bred into don't do anything for yourself. We'll barely give you enough, and then then you'll be fine, you know. And so they didn't really give an incentive to try to learn much. Or to try to take things in their own hands and just more or less they didn't know what they didn't know, right?
Yeah, they were surviving. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all they know how to do is survive. What are they going to eat the next meal? They don't know. All the things, even if it's in front of them, you know, they're still worried about it.
I have a question for you about that. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off here. No. One thing that fostering and mentoring did for me was really change a perspective I had on this big dream that was a home for fostering kids aging out to help them learn how to age out until I fostered. And then that became a very different looking dream because I was like, nope, I'm going to have the kids that will work hard to get to this place, who can prove to me they want to be in this place and that they have this different desire. Because what I saw was, you know, one of the girl I connected with deeply, one day she scaled the fence, went over the roof and got out of there. And later, she is the same one that took it upon herself to do this. Not that I think that kids should be breaking out of it, but at the same time, she's also the one that, yes, she ended up pregnant. Yes, she put herself in school. Yes, she figured out how to get an apartment. She figured out life for herself. Whether it was the best life or not that she could have had, who knows? But she started to figure things out. She was a lot more in control of herself in some ways versus some of, like a child that I had who wasn't going to try very hard, right? And so my question to you is, having come from this place and going through all of these things in life and then coming out on top saying, you know, I love life. I have this perspective. And I go back to when you were 19 and you just said, yeah, I'm fulfilled, right? Is this, and you succeeded in these industries, you've overcome a lot, and we hadn't even talked about everything you've overcome yet. Do you think that's just kind of was in you, or do you think that was learned? Like, do you think that you were that way from the beginning, or do you think that there was something that actually taught you to be that way?
I think it was in me. And again, I'm going to go back to survival. I did not feel like I had anybody or anything that I could count on. So if I didn't do it myself, it wasn't going to happen. So, and as far as even working, my parents struggled financially, so there was no money. So I had to work. I was buying my own school clothes. I was so young. So everything I did was for myself.
But to take it to the next level and be empowered by it and say, I'm not going to identify with that. I'm not going to use it as my excuse or be the victim. I'm also going to be able to transform and be empowered and say, I can be happy. I can be in control, you know, or because of my emotions. Because I've seen people do the acts of bitter and not really embrace life as something that they love, who still are scared of people, who are scared, you know, they didn't really embrace the other part of the light, I guess. Do you think, what made you be able to embrace the light after seeing so much dark?
Lots of therapy. Okay. I mean, I did have the bitter, the angry, I did do it, you know, at the world, you know, but I still did it. There was that drive in me that just survive. I didn't charge enough when I was in business because I didn't feel worthy enough. You know, there's so much of my trauma that was attached to my leadership also. Yet I'm like the parent who told their kids, don't do what I do.
Yes.
You know, but I was still stuck in my trauma, even in my business. I was 25 years old, you know, so I was that bitter person. It wasn't until I started working on myself and going to therapy. I did, you know, therapy for 12 years. I did dream therapy that was in an adopted group. I did that for 12 years. That was the most transformative as far as I'm concerned, because I had to really get into my feelings. So continued work on myself. I do love life, but, you know, it does get hard. It's not all, you know, roses and butterflies all the time. You know, trauma triggers come up and you face them, and I say that triggers are good because it just gives me something I still need to work on.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Well, earlier you mentioned that you did a marathon. Did you say Ironman? So you've had like 12 lives from what you shared. I resonate with that. I often feel like I've done 12 lives myself. So what inspired you to do Ironman? Like, where did that come from?
Started out slow. I started, you know, doing mini triathlons. I joined a triathlon training group. We did a short one. They just kept getting longer and longer. And the end goal was the Ironman. And it was one of the best days of my life. I mean, I've done the Tough Mudder. I've done half Ironmans, half marathons. I've done them all. All of them.
That's amazing.
I loved it.
So we talk about your courage to reinvent, and you've talked a lot about survival mode. And I think a lot of people are in survival mode and they don't even realize it. And even as somebody that can be trained in it, sometimes until you get out of it, you don't realize you were in it. That happened to me most recently. I got remarried to a safe man, and it's the first time I have really felt safe. It was like these layers of safety that would like unlock. Mm-hmm. And then more of my true authentic self would come through. And then, another layer of safety got unlocked. And then another layer of, here's the authentic light of Holly, you know, and I'm noticing that where I think, I'm finally safe. I feel safer than I've ever felt. What was that like? Because I'm hearing an unlocking for yourself as well as you've done your healing work. Are there other things? You mentioned therapy and dream and support groups and things like that. Have there been other elements, whether it's therapy or not, that have organically unlocked some of that survival mode for you?
Breath work has been amazing. Mm-hmm. Love breath work, body work, somatic work. You know, you just, when you're in that fight or flight, as you know, you're not comfortable in your body. You're not safe in your body. You're not safe anywhere. And so just getting safe in my body was huge. Huge.
Thank you. I'd love to open up to our two co-hosts if they have a final question to ask him. And then I'm going to ask him one last final question. But as we get closer to the end of this dynamic conversation, did for either one of you all, did you have a question that you're like, oh, I really wanted to ask that?
Yeah, I do have one for you, Kim. You know, Wise Women Collective and this show is all about having a roundtable on conversations that matter to women. And so I want to ask you if you have one thing that you feel like it's important from your story for women to really hear that will support them in maybe their own journeys. Maybe it'll give them the idea of something they haven't thought of before. Just what would that be?
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is don't stop.
Yeah.
I mean, so many times we give up when it gets hard, and hard is where the growth happens, as we know. And it's just don't stop. Just keep going.
Oh, yeah.
Even if you don't know the direction and you don't know where you're going, just keep going.
I love that. Yes.
I love it.
Brooke?
So I'm wondering if there's a new invention, a reinvention ahead of you. Are you going to do another twist, or are you planning on anything that is different that you've done before here soon or anything of that nature?
Well, I'll tell you, cancer throws it's like throwing the pixie sticks up in the air. It's like you thought you knew where you were going, but now you don't. So I'm not sure. I haven't crossed that bridge yet, but I'm sure there's something coming.
I have a feeling there's definitely something coming out of that.
Yes.
For you. Yes. All right. And then, it's very similar to Lynn's question, but it's a question I love to ask. And it is a little different. If you had one wish for women, what would you wish? What do you wish?
Oh, love yourself as is. Don't change anything about yourself.
Very powerful. So we have, we're going to do a final wrap up question for you. You've shared so much. I mean, we could come here and talk for each individual thing of the facets of your life, and you have an incredible life that you've lived so courageously and reinventing and shifting and changing. We want you to be able to share how anybody can follow you. I know you have, your book is going to be published soon. If they're connecting to your story, we want them to buy the book to really hear more about your story. So we'll be putting it in the show notes, but we'd love for them to hear where they can connect with you or follow you. And then also at the end, you know, we've had this conversation. Is there anything that you came on and you're thinking, I want to come on to this show. And there is like, I already know I want to talk about this. Was there something that you wanted to share that you just felt like in your heart, it was, whether it's something we've talked about or not, is there something on your heart that you wanted to share? And if not, maybe speak to that person that maybe was an adoptee or a foster care or somebody that is currently in survival mode. What would you say to them? Either or.
Ooh, is there anything I really wanted to talk about? You know, what comes to mind first and what I thought of when you first asked me what in this reinvention was my choice to close my business, which, you know, we didn't touch on, but after 30 years, I chose just to close the doors and for multiple reasons. And there was a lot of pushback for that because when you're in survival mode, that was part of getting out of survival mode too, just, you know, getting rid of that grind and hustle and kind of realizing I was doing more for everybody else than I was for myself. Even for the industry, I was, you know, doing things for the industry because who am I if I'm not a leader? Who am I if I'm not a salon owner? Who am I without my career? So that was the first thing I thought of about talking about. Did that answer your question?
Oh, yes. And it's awesome because we have other guests that we're meeting with, that there was a common thread from another guest on a very similar topic. So this will be interesting as we play this out and let people hear this thread, because that may show up more as this story continues. So I think that was divinely inspired and perfect for you to share. So how will they find you if they come to try to look for you?
I am everywhere. I am on Instagram, Kim Russell Pro. I am on TikTok, Kim Russell Pro. My website is www.kimrussellpro. Facebook, Kim Russell. LinkedIn, Kim Russell. I think that's it. No, you do.
So you retired from your salon. Are you currently coaching or mentoring or any of that nature for people to connect with?
I am doing workshops at beauty shows on the impact trauma has on your career.
Wow.
As leaders or as a hairstylist, you know, but it really goes for anybody. So that's what I was doing before I got diagnosed. And I'm going to do that again in May. I'm very excited to do that. So.
Well, we are connected with a lot of retreats and a lot of corporate workshops and things like that. So if you're listening to that, you want to hear her story because it's going to make an impact. So thank you, everybody, that we're on today. This is a beautiful story. Did you all have anything else, Lynn or Brooke?
Just Kim, thank you for coming. Thank you for sharing. You know, I think our voices are so important for other women to hear. And it's so important for women to hear women tell the stories of whatever they've overcome so that other women think, oh, well, maybe I can overcome my things too. And so just thank you. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
We'll see you soon.
Well, thanks.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you for joining us on the Wise Women Collective Show.
We trust you're leaving inspired, empowered, and ready to make a difference. Keep the momentum going. Join our Wise Women Collective community at wisewomencollectivehq.com.
Connect with other women, amplify your power, and together we'll continue to rise. Until next time, stay strong and connected, because when women rise, the world follows.